this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Going on Fake Facts and Jacks. I'm somehow Ricky on a board. A chilly, rainy day in Chicago. We thought we were kind of over these, but evidently not. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 37. Why not? We're going up. We're up 3 days in a row. Well, we know we're going to land today because we have the CPI number this morning, but we seem to already have the background spin being written. Well, you could write this stuff. Oh, we're going to come in at some big number, say 1% for the month, which is a lot. But don't worry, it's all oil and it'll go away. So there you go. So it'll be transitory. Transitory. And you'll have the president come out and say something like, you got to suck it up for a while because look at all the good we're doing in the Middle East, and that'll be the end of that. And everybody will believe it, and we'll be okay for a while. So you got to have your spin. I think I might come back in life. Yeah, I come back as a spin doctor. What do you think, Kevin? A spin doctor?
You mean one of the band members of that erstwhile 1990s band?
Remember
the spin doctors?
Yeah, yeah. You know who was, I forgot the name of the band, though. An amazingly successful band for like 30 years. The first drummer was Chevy Chase. And he said, you guys are way too good for me. Get another guy. It was only there for like a year. That happens.
Most movies and Saturday Night Live and all of those were too good for him, too.
Yeah, I know. He was a interesting character, but...
Also known as kind of a jackass, so...
Oh, yeah.
Not a great reputation to have.
No.
But, hey, regarding that opener, you know, about the it's dark and we're wearing sunglasses, occurs to me that I wear sunglasses in the dark pretty regularly. I have very bad, not very bad. I have poor night vision, always have. And it's really a problem when it's rainy, because the glare of the water makes it hard for me to see the road markings. So I put on my sunglasses in the dark.
Now, when you say sunglasses, you're not talking about...
It gets rid of the glare.
You know, but not stuff you wear skiing. You're talking about something like a very light anti-glare, almost like a yellowish tint or something.
Oh, it's my regular daytime sunglasses.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You know, prescription.
I think it's more for you. It's the future so bright, you got to wear shades.
That could be it.
I actually have a pair of they were two for the price of one. You know the thing, when you buy cheap sunglasses, the reason why they're cheap is you don't care about them and you lose them. But anyway, I bought a pair one day and they threw in one of those kind of yellow night vision ones. And those actually, and in the twilight and in the rain, those help pretty much. I don't know if they really help in the dark at night, but they do if it's like what you're saying. It's kind of the flat light kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, in my case, I don't wear contact lenses, and I do have a prescription, so I don't buy the cheapy ones and that I'd care if I lose. I absolutely care if I lose them.
Well, yeah, me too. Well, most of them, but I mean, you know,
I left my shades in a rental car once, and I was so pissed.
Oh God, well, you know, I used to ski quite a bit. I mean, it was never all that good. I'm going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, I might have made it to a 5.5 or something along them, but enough to enjoy myself. And you really get an idea of what the different light is and the different sunglasses when you're up on the mountain, because if it if you've got the, if it's really big time sun, you better have like some real stuff, like some Varnaze or something that cost you a lot of money even back then, because otherwise, you know, your eyes are bugging you all night. Not to mention you're doing damage. But then when it turns flat, if you've got those on, you can't see the ripples in the snow. You better get yourself some of those that are yellow or rose-colored ones or something, so you can see some contracts. Otherwise, you're skiing along, you can't see a little bump. So it's really important. That's why you see guys with the, if there's changing light conditions, you'll see them with their really hard, the big-time sunglasses on their eyes, but around their neck, you'll see their goggles. So as minute the light turns flat, they pull off the sun. I mean, it's really a big deal, sort of like what you're talking about. There's more to this, well, how about a pun, more to this than meets the eye. I mean, you really have to be careful, especially when you're trying to whiz along faster than you really know what you're doing. Speaking of which, your girlfriend Lindsey Vonn is not ruling out the 2030 games.
Speaking of whiz, okay, what did Lindsey Vonn do?
She claims she's not out of the 2030 games.
What's she going to be? Is there like a senior citizen category?
I don't know, but one thing's for sure, when you get on one of those downhill things, once gravity takes hold, it doesn't matter your age, you're going fast. That part's the truth. Hey, what do you...
There's so much skill, but I have a lot of respect for her. You know, she's resilient and incredibly competitive, and so, you know, I know nothing about her as a person, but as a competitor, hats off.
She was Tiger's girlfriend for a while.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah.
Carl, were you going to say something?
Would I say something about that?
Well, I thought I heard your voice chime in the background. So.
Oh no! I'm a little, this morning I'm actually my article for this morning, because it's going to happen before I do the podcast for tomorrow, which is sad. But I'm musing over whether or not we're going to be witness to a barbecue a little later today.
A barbecue.
Yes, a very serious barbecue.
All right, you got to lead us down the road on this one.
Well, we got a bunch of people that are quite possibly going to get barbecued.
The people in the spaceship?
In Artemis, yep.
Well, I hope not.
Well, the exact same process that caused the destruction of both of the shuttles is in play here. The precise same stupidity out of NASA.
Well, one was coming down and one was going up. How was it the same issue?
No, because in both cases, NASA knew damn well that what they were doing was outside the boundaries of safety and their calculations by previous experience, and launched anyway, and they did this again, this time. Columbia was lost because they changed, for environmental reasons, the foam on the tank, which has to be there to insulate it, because you have liquid, cryogenic liquids in there. If you don't, it will, of course, form a shitload of ice, which will then break off during launch and whatever have you. Never mind the fact that the stuff can't evaporate and raise the pressure to the point that it explodes before you launch. Okay, so you have to have insulation on the tank. They changed the formulation on the foam for environmental reasons, because the other stuff was not green enough, and of course the tank ends up in the water after you're done, and da-da-da-da-da. The problem was, it did not adhere properly. Pieces of it during prior launches had broken off. They saw this on the video from those launches. They continued to launch with the new formulation, instead of going back to the old stuff, which worked perfectly well, and a large chunk of it came off during Columbia's launch and put a hole in the wing, which there was once that happened, there was absolutely nothing they could do about it, because there is a hole through the heat shield components, which of course lets the 5,000 degree gas in there. And
you're talking about the one that blew up on reentry.
That's correct.
Yes,
the one that blew up on reentry. The other one blew up because they, and again, same basic problem. They knew full well those joints were not entirely performing as designed and modeled, They knew that because on recovery they had found burn damage in the O-ring seals at the joints. They hadn't gone all the way through, but they knew it was happening. And they launched anyway, and it exploded because it burned through, and that burn through caused a structural failure, and that was, you know, that was Challenger, okay? But both those cases. Now, in this case, during the uncrewed test of Artemis, the first one, when they recovered the capsule, they found that the heat shield had not performed as designed. There was severe spalling of the material, and it was way beyond expectations. And on top of that, some of the attachment hardware was very badly damaged. Now, it didn't burn through, so if you'd been in there, you would have survived. You would have been okay. But the reason it occurred is that it's the same material that was used for Apollo. However, they changed the use of it, and instead of a monolithic one-piece heat shield, which was a pain in the ass to make, they went to a tiled design using the same material. Well, their computer modeling
the shuttle was a tiled design too, right?
Yes, but the shuttle was... Yeah, and the shuttle didn't have significant problems with this. By the way, this is one of the things that Musk is having some trouble with his Starship stuff.
Yeah, but the shuttle, every time it came back, they found that there were tiles missing, and it just wasn't enough to blow it up.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
So this, the problem with this is twofold. Number one is that the spalling, obviously if it burns all the way through or burns the attachment hardware off, everyone's going to die. The other problem is that the pieces that come off when it does this can puncture other things, and there is a really, really important thing on the top of the capsule, which is the compartment that holds the parachutes.
Yeah. Well, okay. What Carl's talking about is when there's no... If you watch Star Trek or something, they show up Earth's atmosphere, they've always got power, and they go into orbit. Well, these guys, when they come back, they're going... They're essentially coming up using the Earth's gravity to get back here. And if you do the math, you're going about 25,000 miles an hour when you hit the atmosphere. And you have to hit it at just the right angle, because if you hit it too shallow, you basically bounce off and you're never seen or heard from again. And if you hit it too steep, you burn up no matter what you have on there, right? So you got to hit it just right. So the side that you put towards the Earth, the entire capsule or whatever it is not covered by these heat shields. So you have to align yourself in such a way where... And if you ever see a picture of these guys coming in, the thing looks like a huge fireball.
Oh, yeah. Well, the basic... And by the way, the reason they do this, for those who failed physics class or never took it, the carried energy, kinetic energy, is 1/2 mv². When you come in from Earth orbit, you're coming in at about 17,000 miles an hour if you're in low Earth orbit. When you're coming in from a free return trajectory from the moon, it's about 25,000. The reason you don't slow down and go back into Earth orbit, which, by the way, would be really nice, because, you know, what happens if there's a hurricane over the place that you want to land, right? That's kind of a problem. But the reason that they don't do that is because you can't. You have to lift everything you want with you off the planet when you launch, and it's not possible to carry enough fuel to go back into Earth orbit. So once you leave the moon to come back here, all you have left is maneuvering fuel. You have no fuel to actually go back into an Earth orbit. You can't.
Plus, it would be incredibly an awful lot of fuel to slow down from 25,000 to, like, say, 2,000.
Well, to come back into Earth orbit, you'd have to about 7.
I'm talking about just to come in and land.
Oh, forget it. Yeah. But the thing is that you can, even just enough to slow back down and be
now they did that with the bird of prey in the search for Spock or whatever it was.
In science fiction, everything is easy, right? Because you just ignore the math. But the problem with trying to do it for real is you can't carry enough fuel. It's not possible. You can't do it. And so you have to come back in directly because you have empty tanks. And there isn't a choice.
Well, you not only have empty tanks, you jettison the tank, probably.
Well, you jettison it because there's nothing left in it. All right. I mean, there's no point in trying to hang on to it at that point. But yeah, I mean, it would, if they were, if the math worked on this, the sane thing to do would be to slow down to be recaptured in Earth orbit, and that way, if something is wrong in the landing or whatever have you, you know, the weather's bad, whatever have you, you can sit up there and go around a couple more times. It's no big deal. That's not a choice.
No.
So
you're all in on this thing.
Well, yeah, this material is actually kind of interesting stuff in that you could hold on to a piece of it on the back and take a acetylene blowtorch and blast the front of it, and you wouldn't even feel it.
You know where I learned this, believe it or not, and Kevin knows what I'm talking about. They had a class in Notre Dame called Space Tech and Society.
Yeah.
And it was a class generally for people in aerospace engineer that was, they'd go and yuck around a little bit and lend, you know, put airplanes off the balcony in the theater. And, yeah. And it was about, you know, a lot of stuff that was going on in the aerospace world and how to fly right. a kite and all this kind of stuff. Well, of course, all the other idiots on campus, like the guys in my dorm and Kevin and mine's friends, found out about this course, that it was basically an easy A, so everybody signs up for it. Well, because the Notre Dame had such a huge thing with the aerospace people, they didn't cancel the class. They just said, okay, everybody wants to take it, they can take it. And if you actually showed up, like I did, the three people that taught it, one guy was the head of NASA for a while, some other guy was almost as high. I've never been to a more fascinating class in my life. They went through what the shuttle was supposed to look like and how it ended up the way it was. They went through the DC-10 crash and why, you know. I mean, it was fascinating stuff. And a lot of it was just about what you were talking about. What how the heat shield has to be there, and if you don't align the capsule right. If you got the heat shield's on the S end and not the front end, it doesn't do you any good, right? It better be aligned towards where you're landing.
Well, yeah, they design the capsule aerodynamically so that it centers itself, from the aerodynamic forces.
Okay? Except for coming in, you want the big part that's
well, that's
toward
what I'm
the,
saying. Yeah. But it's aerodynamically designed with the center of gravity and everything else, so that you know, as long as you're in the corridor, the capsule from the aerodynamic forces will point the correct direction the right way. Okay, because otherwise, again, you don't have fuel to hold yourself right in that position. All right, so you you are trusting that, you know, the calculations are right. And, you know, like I said, this material is not new stuff. It was developed for Apollo. It absolutely works, but when they changed the way it's used, the results they got in the uncrewed test were not what they had modeled.
Hey, as long as you're here, why don't we shift a little bit? I want to talk to Kevin about, leave politics out of it. The Department of Justice is open up. We talk about Paul Harvey, page 2. Investigation in the NFL regarding potential anti-competitive tactics using with all the different places now people have to pay to watch a football game. And I don't know, I want to get Kevin's opinion. Kevin, I don't know, given just as a little bit of background, Major League Baseball has a, I won't even call it an antitrust exemption, but, well, I guess it is, because the Supreme Court, in her total lack of wisdom, said that it isn't interstate commerce, which of course it is. And the Sherman and Clayton Act only really apply to interstate commerce. So they basically said baseball does not apply because it's not interstate. Well, that's the most bullshit decision anybody's ever come up with, especially as time has gone by. Now, football, however, does not have that. Football, when the two leagues decided to merge in 1961-62, when they started talking the first time, they got an exemption to be able to market as a group and not individual teams go out and get their own TV and so forth packages. So they have some sort of a marketing carve-out that maybe Kevin knows more about, but it's not a total exemption. But I don't know, once they have that, just because they go from, I mean, I don't like it at all, they go from NBC, say, to Paramount, where you got to charge people or people have to pay, I don't know that's not covered by their think. I don't know how. I'm not so sure where the government's going with this. Are you?
No, I'm not. And honest and truly, as much as I don't like what they do, what's the predicate for the government being able to tell them what outlets they must use to broadcast their product, and with an emphasis on it being free and available to everybody. I mean, that's popular. We're used to it. Fans might revolt if there's no free football, but what's the predicate for saying you have to offer football over the air for free or as part of, you know, what people would consider their standard cable package? So I guess that's sort of for free because they're going to have the cable package anyway. Well, what's even the basis for that? Why is the government involved in that at all?
Well, I think that the...
Or should they be providing exemptions, by the way? So that's...
Well, that's... I'm agreeing with you, but I think the only resolve of the government is you don't get to have anything like this. You don't get to have a draft. You don't get any of that crap. Nobody gets a draft for any other business. I think the only predicate, just like Carl's always talking about with the drug companies, it's not, oh, please cut back a price on this one, will you, so people can afford it. It's, what are you doing? You got no business doing any of that. I think the football is sort of the same way. I don't want to go into the drug part, but the only thing I can see, Kevin, and I'm kind of with you on this, is you take away the whole mess, right?
Yeah. Now, if they want to have collective bargaining and agree to a draft, okay, they can do that. There's a lot that they're fine to do that's part of the status quo. But I really think that what we're really looking at here is just some pandering to people.
Well, I mean, you're going low on me. When you have a monopoly and the people are essentially serfs, and the first day you collective bargain and they agree with some horrible plan because they're going up against King Kong, it may be called collective bargaining, but it's not a fair fight. When you had a draft for 30 years... And all of a sudden you get a union together, and the union kind of agrees with the draft. I don't think they have anywhere near the power at that point to say there's not going to be a draft.
I hear what you're saying. However, Major League Baseball, somehow the player's side almost always wins the negotiations, and they still have a draft.
That's because...
They pretty much kick management's ass every single time.
Well, we'll let Carl referee that. I think the answer to that is no, honestly, Kevin. I think it is for... The players that control the collective bargaining. So yes, the guys on the team that are already in the major leagues that do the bargaining, cut it out and have kicked their ass in regards to themselves. They have not kicked their ass at all in regards to minor leagues or the draft there or somebody signing a team and all of a sudden you got 12 shortstops and the guy can't go anywhere else. They haven't scratched the surface for people that aren't them.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm not advocating for anybody, and I'm certainly sure as hell not feeling sorry for anybody who's involved in it. But what I'm saying is, where do they have the legal boundaries? And they can do that, and I don't. I have a hard time understanding what the government's role is in this, unless they just want to say, you remember that antitrust exemption?
It comes down to, and it's not just there. I mean, it was the, I think, without speaking out of my ass, but I think didn't the auto workers, this is probably a Carl question, years ago decide that when they were at the meetings, the bargaining meetings, they decided to pay new workers less than the old workers?
Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, to hell with that. I didn't see any new workers sit at the table.
Well, that's part of the problem, though, is that we pay absolutely zero attention to facts when it comes to stuff like this, no matter what area of the economy it's in. Not only was that something that... was wildly anti-competitive, duh,
yeah.
Right?
Well,
but on top of that, you were sticking it to people that didn't have a vote because they weren't part of the union yet. All right, now I don't know about you, but that, I mean, to me, if there's somewhere that implicates antitrust law, that probably is pretty far up the list, right? But of course, that went exactly nowhere. Then again, you also have you know, this was, Chief, this was also a big part of what happened in 08 when, you know, when all the automakers got in trouble, okay? General Motors literally not only dodged, you know, their obligations that would normally exist in a bankruptcy, right? They screwed all the people who had open cases against them for those defective ignition switches, and what the government allowed them to do was protect the pension of old UAW workers at the expense of everybody else, which, by the way, is blatantly illegal, because the PBGC is set up in such a way that if you blow up, if your pension fund blows up, whatever is in the pension fund goes into the PBGC, and whatever percentages can be paid out of that get paid, and everybody else gets hosed. And if you want to go after management or whoever for basically stealing your money, that's a private cause of action. That's the government's not involved in that. No. Instead, what they did was protect the UAW's pension obligations at the expense of everybody else.
Well, when Detroit declared bankruptcy, the same thing. They protected the pensions of people in the city versus the people they owed money to.
Well, I understand. I'm just saying that, you know, the law be damned, right, whenever it's
un- Well, you didn't listen yesterday when Denny Crane was talking about Supreme Court is appointed by the president. If the president wants to shoot people, then they get to shoot people.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, you know, it depends on who's the president.
He was talking about Cheney, by the way, not the current people.
Well, but I'm saying, you know, who gets shot, and whether it's economically or literally depends on who happens to be sitting in the chair at the time, right? But, you know, last time I checked, we had supposedly a rule of law and a set of processes that's you're not supposed to be able to do that shit.
Well, the rule of law also is supposed to be somewhat based in justice, too. But that,
well, do you think? I mean, you know, supposedly.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is the only way to really deal with this, and the only real way to deal with, you know, maybe the drug, it's all the same movie. I mean, that's probably the theme of the show. I mean, you know, the attorneys like Lou, and he's so good at this that you can't really argue with the guy. But, you know, it's like in my early days, I read some of the history of Pullman. Okay, you finally have a union thing. The union, you let them in the door, and the guys are like shaking, and the place is surrounded by Pinkertons with guns. It's not really an open negotiation. I mean, maybe you go from 30 cents an hour to 35 and think you won, but it's not exactly something. It's a fair fight, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's essentially the issue, right?
Yeah.
Right. So refocusing a little bit back to this television thing, I'm very confused about what basis the government thinks it has to tell the NFL where they have to broadcast their games. I'm hard-pressed to come up with that. Maybe you guys have something else. And I don't even like defending the NFL because I hate their TV arrangement. I hate that they're doing all this extra stuff with Amazon Prime and Peacock and all that. And, you know, so I don't like it. I just don't know why the government thinks it gets to tell them where they have to broadcast.
Well, Kevin, consider this for a second. What, maybe we're not zeroing in on the question I ask, you know, whatever, even over an adult beverage once in a while. We're talking about, let's say, for instance, Amazon buys in and they pay up a boatload for Thursday Night Football, whatever the hell they're doing, God knows what. And now, I think the three of us, whether we would agree on the number, we would say, okay, the first week they have that, now a lot of people got Amazon Prime, but you're not going to get as many viewers, especially if the bars don't have it or something like that. You're not going to get as many viewers as you otherwise would. So, okay, what makes it, from the economic antitrust side, what makes it worth it to Amazon to do that? Now, do they get to force somebody to buy Amazon Prime, which is absolutely against the Clayton Act, to watch a football game? I would say that's against the Clayton Act verbatim. So you wonder if the monopoly piece isn't with the NFL, it's with these other guys that are doing it. What do you think of that?
They probably that is the most likely reason that they will still continue to show some of these games on local TV, even though everybody else has to watch it on Prime.
Well, what I'm saying is, say a million people watch Thursday Night Football, if it's on Channel 7 or free TV, and all of a sudden somebody grabs it, pays a boatload for it, and all of a sudden there's 500,000 people watching. You sit there, I would sit there and go, boy, that's interesting that somebody would pay up for half the crowd. Now, why would they do that? Well, they have something else to sell. And you have to buy something else in order to get it, which is, what's the term for that, Carl?
Well, that's a tide sale, and it's illegal.
Yeah, and it's illegal.
Yeah.
That's my point. I'm saying, Kevin, maybe it's not the NFL that's the problem. It's the other people. Are these other people too powerful?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the basic issue that, you know, that I have with all of this is, you know, that's where the issue is. And my point of view on all of this is that, you know, I mean, you look at, I mean, since we're talking about antitrust and people doing wildly, stupidly illegal things, did you see the thing that was announced what the USPS is doing tomorrow? You know, yeah, it actually hit the wire yesterday. They've decided, now tell me how you get to do this. They've decided not to make the pension contributions.
To who?
Well, that have to be put in for the people who work for them.
So the U.S. Postal Service is a separate pension pool than the rest of the government? I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, the U.S. Postal Service is a quasi-private corporation that is run by the government.
Okay.
Okay, so I mean... So,
so
they
it's
have
a separate to, pension pool.
It's a completely separate pension pool, that's right. And they have decided, because they're such nice guys, that they're not going to... You know, they've got a cash problem, okay? They've got a cash flow problem. And their way of dealing with this is, and this is part of FAERS. FAERS is, you know, it's a separate pool, but it's part of the federal employment system. All right. And the Postal Service a couple of weeks ago warned Congress it'd run out of cash in about a year or less, and without significant reforms, including, you know, increasing prices, you know, for stamps and everything else, but also changes to pension funding. And then they turned around and they just said, oh, we're not going to put anything.
Well, the question,
you know,
pops up, since I was pretty involved in this with Pullman and a couple other places, my first question is, is the thing overfunded or fully funded?
Well, no. Apparently. I mean, I don't know precisely what it is, but there, you know, from that standpoint, but I mean, this is still, you know.
Well, I mean, if they're
all right, so this,
if they're 110% of what they need, not making a payment, I guess could be justified. If they're 40% of what they need, then it probably isn't.
Well, okay, now, you know, in government terms, this is small ball money, but in real term, you know, in real company terms, it's not. The amount that they're not putting in is something like $2.5 billion.
All right, but somewhere in that article, if somebody's going to be critical of it, somebody should get the number of what the money is in their versus their obligation right now.
Yeah, I don't have that. But essentially what they're talking about now is for one thing, now part of the problem is that the Postal Service is supposed to be a self-supporting, you know, paid for by your cost of stamps and, you know, whatever have you, right? However, apparently they want, They say that the cost of that first class stamp needs to go over a dollar, so that's about 25% increase.
Well, they're trying to get it to 82 cents from 75.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, needs to be over a buck by
we know, and Kevin would be teaching a class, you can't say that, because if it goes to a buck and you lose 20% of your people, you're right back where you started from.
Well, yeah, you may have made the problem
worse.
Yeah,
you may have made it worse.
Right? Right, and then the other problem is that the Postal Service supposed to be self-supporting, but they have been borrowing, and they've hit the debt cap, which is $15 billion,
And they've said, basically, you have to let us play more Ponzi scheme. Otherwise, it's going to collapse.
Well, I think they need... This is a... you know, Kevin, I want your opinion on this. I think if the mantra is that the every stamp, no matter where it goes in this country, is the same price.
Right.
Well, that
first class,
that may have been okay 50 years ago or 100 years ago. It's clearly not okay now.
Well, realize, Chief, the other problem is that you know, they've a lot of their older trucks, you know, were things that, you know, they date to the 1950s, right?
Yep.
And you know, I mean, no heat, no air conditioning, da da da. Well, this has been an issue for a long time. All right, what do we do about this? Because at some point you start running into problems, you know, getting things like, okay, I need to do some work on the engine. By the way, there's no parts.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that kind of thing becomes a serious issue. But during the Biden administration, the Biden administration essentially forced the USPS into a green mandate to try to replace all these trucks with electric things. Oh, by the way, your eyes would bug out at what the per unit cost was of these things. They also, you know, have all the issues that go along with that. There's no infrastructure for charging, all the things, right? By the way, you know, how much are the battery packs when they wear out, right? And some of them were fuel powered in certain areas, and so yeah, I mean, this is pretty complicated.
What do you think it costs to get somebody a letter from Chicago to some farm in Wyoming or someplace in Alaska? It's got to be way more than 75 cents.
Well, yeah. On the other hand, you know, if I mail something to the guy that's you know, three doors down from me, rather than walk it over there, you know, if there was some intelligence in how this stuff was handled, it would be part of the same run that the carrier, you know, already was making.
You know,
right?
when I was in this at the school board, not that I was anything of any, I was a janitor, okay, but the guys would tell me that this is before my time, that they're in the 50s and 60s. They would guarantee overnight mail in the city.
Oh yeah,
I mean that gone by way of the dodo bird.
Well, yeah, that's been gone for a long time. I mean, good God!
And this is with people, the people doing it, not with well, you know, machines reading and all the other stuff.
Chief, when I lived in Chicago, there were times that it would take a week to you know, to get a piece of mail from some business, you know, some bank in the loop out to my apartment. All right, I mean, that's insane.
Hey, well, we still have Kevin. I want to go a little bit, Kevin.
Just to chime in on that, the whole thing, the larger problem, of course, with the post office is it's a business model that was built for a long time ago, and assumed no other competition.
Right.
And so, you know, not only do we have all the package delivery companies and so on, but we have email. And all kinds of other electronic media. So it is actually a business that, instead of trying to figure out how we keep it alive, it needs to be skinny down to, are there any essential services that they provide that won't get provided elsewhere, and otherwise shut down the whole damn thing.
Well, I don't, you know, I think
at some point a business might have to die once, you know,
We
don't make a lot of buggies other than for people to cruise around cities in horses and just hope Kramer doesn't give them any beans to eat.
Well, yeah, there's that, right? I mean, just some of this stuff is just nuts, all right? I mean, I don't know. I just, the Postal Service, you know, has been the brunt of bad jokes for a long time. But when I was growing up, it was not.
Well, just because it's... If you go to your local place, and there's going to be some places where everybody's going, oh, man, look who's there. They're inevitably, in some areas, they're of some race. Okay. And people love to give crap to people. And when they walk out, we used to call it the gas station walk. Remember when people used to have to fill up your tank, and the guy would come out and it would take them 40 minutes to cover the 10 yards between the place and your car? We used to call it the gas station walk. Yet then again, my guy... just retired, the nicest guy. The guy worked his ass off. We never had a problem. The guy loved his job. I mean, so the guy never didn't have a lazy bone in his body. So you got to be real careful when you generalize.
Well, actually, my generalization, one positive generalization about the Postal Service is they do an amazing job of taking poorly addressed letters and packages
and actually getting
them to the right place.
Yeah. Yeah, and not every time, but a whole lot more often than you'd think, right?
And more often than anybody has a right to expect.
Well, I'm just saying, far more often than you'd expect, given the foolishness of what may be on the address. But the other thing that I will note, and this is a general issue within government employment to begin with. All right, It's also because of the insanity we have with our current civil legal system. It's unfortunately all over the private sector as well. And that is, for my entire life, every time I have gone into the DMV, which of course is state run, right, it's been people that are doing a gas station walk, right? And there's five people in the place. Behind the counter, there's 10 people in there with transactions or whatever have you, tag renewals or license renewals or whatever. You would think this would be a 5 or 10 minute process. It's not. It takes 2 hours, and you're sitting there, and it's a pain in the butt.
Right? Well, you also have, on one side of the counter, you've got people like you and me and Kevin. Mr. Type A, you allotted 10 minutes for this job, and the guy behind the counter is not in the same pace you are.
and he thinks it's perfectly fine for him to walk at a pace that, you know, he could be outrun by a snail, and work at that pace.
Well, okay. Everybody likes everybody else going.
But Chief, nobody gets fired for doing this. Okay, now in the private sector, it doesn't work like that. But the thing is, then I move here to Tennessee, okay, and their process. What used to take, when I was in Florida, when I was in Illinois, when I was in, you know, all the places I've lived until I move here, what used to take a couple of hours to go and get all your titles redone, your license changed, da 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 da, you know, all that stuff, right? Literally 5 minutes, and I'm in and out of there.
Well, I've never really had problems here. I thought the people were actually pretty good every time I went.
Well, I mean, I've never seen anything like that before. Right?
Well, I mean, there are people, and I'm not accusing you of this. There are people that if you walk into the local Jewel, and the person doesn't sprint to slice your ham for you, they think something's wrong because that guy, he should be waiting on me as fast as I think he should be waiting. Well, okay, that's fine, but
but still, point being, okay, not only that, tags, titles, and such. For the trailer and the two vehicles I have, were under $100.
Okay, well, that's all cool. Right. That's nice.
And the lady behind the counter at the county office, there was a line, and I was in and out of there with all of that on that transaction in 2 minutes, and another five at the licenses in Tennessee are done at the Homeland Security office, which is kind of weird. But that's where they are, and they still give you the paper one, and then the real one comes in the mail because they can't make them in the building. And apparently this, is something they've decided is better from a standpoint of not having people hand out ones to God and everybody who's not supposed to get one.
Well, yeah, you don't know.
Well, you can't. It's harder to bribe somebody when it's all coming from a centralized place, right? So, okay. Whatever the circumstance may be.
Well, I ended up having a... I thought this was going to be really easy, but nothing is easy, right? Everybody knows, my dad was a policeman, so they got this outfit here, the Chicago Police Benefits Group, and they essentially gather up money to buy the policeman's second vest for him. The first vest is on the city, but they wear out after 4 or 5 years, and then second vest is on the guy. Which is, they're like $1,500 or $1,200 or something. They're not cheap. And you don't want to be walking around with a 10-year-old vest. I don't know how it degrades, but evidently it does. How it could, is beyond my pay grade, but it does. And so I go to the place, and I go, and there's a big catalog of licenses here in Illinois. Kevin knows it. Oh, he's living in, there's the Audubon Society. There's the White Sox. If you want a White Sox plate, You give them $50, it goes to White Sox charities, and you get a White Sox plate. It's not like
yeah,
the states.
They got it here too.
Yeah,
they
so
got it here too.
There's got to be 50 of them. So I go, okay, I want one of these policeman benefits thing. Oh no, you got to like go over there. What do you mean go over there? You know, the Midwest, the Madison bus takes you out to Asheville. Like, oh, I'm not gonna take the bus back and forth to give $50 to somebody who's gonna get a license plate. Well, now of course, people have known my personality, figured out by now. Well, now I'm gonna get one of these license plates. I'm not gonna be told no, right? So I do make my way out there, and the lady says, you know, who the people can get them, and he goes, oh, and so why do you want one? I just want to give you guys some money. I like policemen. Well, was your dad a policeman? Well, yeah. Okay, well, he's got to sign this. Sign it. He's been dead since 1956.
How the hell's he going to do that?
How's he
going to
do that? Well, if you don't have somebody sign it for you, we have to do a total background check on you.
Oh, my God.
I'm going, you got to do what? So she goes, oh, yeah, fill out all this stuff, and we'll see if the state essentially deems you worthy, that you're not like a crook. We don't want a crook with a Chicago. It's not a Chicago police plate. It's a policeman benefits plate.
Right.
So finally, she calls me up and says, okay, you're good to go. And I said, did I pass? She goes, we've never seen one that clean. Yeah, come on in. So I go in. I give them the $50 or $100, and they give me the thing for the state. So then I go, I'm back to the DMV. This is about 8 trips by now. So I say to the guy, okay, I want my Chicago police plate. Okay, well, we don't have any of those here, but you need a plate. So they give me a regular plate until the other one comes in the mail, which is like 3 weeks later. And I'm thinking, so now they ended up having to give me 2 plates, which has to cost something. And then when I get the plate from the police, it's supposed to be people that, if you just give you a number, and then next to it, it has FP and all the ones I ever saw. Well, because they must have liked me now, I get CP. So people actually think I am a policeman, which I'm not.
God.
So the weird part is when they were doing all the stuff down here with the riots and the bridges are open, and I needed to get to work, guys would look at my plate and they'd say, you could go through. They thought it was, could you write fiction like this? Nobody buy the book, would they?
You know, it's just it's stuff like this. People rag on the ridiculous inefficiency of things within government and the amount of waste and, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse is the catch-all term, right? And the rank stealing that they have had, you know, all kinds of documentation of, you know, in the fairly recent past. Anyone that thinks that hasn't been going on all the way through this, I mean, of course it has, right? I mean, it's infamous that it's, but it's not just that. And when you take a look at how much money gets blown, and
well,
by the way,
it's blown to us, but it's blown to somebody.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly the point, is that you get the bill, right? I mean, I just paid what I owe the IRS, and, you know, like many years, I have a deficit at the end of the year, right? I put enough estimated in that I don't get penalized, but I still have to write them a decent-sized check. And, you know, and that alternates from time to time, because sometimes I'm on the other side, and they give me some scratch back, but, you know, but I always stay within the safe harbor so that I don't end up getting hit with a penalty. And, you know, I did this. And then you start thinking about this. You sons of bitches. Because here's the thing. Not only, we all want government services of some kind, right? We all want to be able to drive on a road that isn't full of potholes. Of course, you know, yeah, that's a problem too.
But if you have an electric car, you don't have to pay.
Okay, except, well, at least in Tennessee, they've shut that down to a large degree, and that now, because you don't pay any gas tax, your tags all of a sudden got quite expensive.
Okay, they haven't done that here yet.
Well, you know what? Everybody that owns one of those things, and hybrids, too, it's lower, but, you know, because you do use some gas, but they've done that here, and all the people with those cars are screaming, and I'm like, look, I pay, you know, to do the roads every time I fill the car up, right? And,
well, but
and
they,
by
the nobody, way, it's whose ax is being gored. Hey, well, we still have Kevin. I want, and he's teaching this stuff, not on a daily basis, but I'm sure he's getting questions. Kevin, how do you? This inflation talk has been going crazy now for 4 or 5 years, but now it's a whole different type of inflation, or at least that's what's being told about. The oil shock, sort of like 73 as we went through, And as time went by, people back then realized it wasn't the oil shock in 73 that raised the prices. It was other stuff. But I find right now it's unfair to say because, I mean, it's what I've studied my whole life. The ignorance regarding this in terms of what you hear on TV and what you hear just anywhere is incredible because, like anything else, actually last night we were talking about oil production. And I go, you know, I used to go to these seminars where all these people were getting you to buy in these oil and gas deals. And the conclusion I came out of, it is such an amazingly complicated industry where this oil well might have thing in it that geologically it looks like, but by the way, it's 40 miles from a road. We can't even touch it for how many years, but we don't know. We got a 20% chance of finding oil, but if we do, it's going to be a gusher. Then there's other places where it's a natural gas field, and we know that if we drill one, we're going to pretty much have an 80% chance of getting this much gas. So if we drill it, we can get a 10% return for people for 20 years, but it's not a gusher. It's not something we can sell. It is amazingly complicated. And to me, the inflation is the same way. And I don't know if the people on TV, the reporters, whoever they are, radio, if they don't know what the hell they're talking about or they're just trying to make it simple, stupid for everybody. And it is so... I guess I'll ask Kevin. I'll give you an example that when you talk about oil prices up here, okay, well, if the president's correct, which I think he's pretty close, that the oil price, say we're doing gallon per gallon, we make what we use. Okay, for us, all that is a massive shift from people paying to people who got it, right? There's collectively, there's no real inflation in the country. Well, the prices are up, but in terms of money movement, there's no real money movement out of the country. Now, of course, these people aren't all, you know, Shell's not owned by people here, so even that gets complicated, but it's a totally different situation than, say, Japan.
Right.
Where Japan has to not only buy the oil, they got to buy dollars to buy the oil. They there's no other place to lay it off, for a betting term. They just all of a sudden every day are paying $30 million more or $50 million, whatever it is, for something that they're not getting back anywhere. So for them, it's a totally different issue than for us if we actually are. Now, say Canada, I don't know their situation, but say Canada might actually produce more than they use. Okay, well, the people using the gas are paying a dollar more a gallon. They're getting it stuck in the behind. But the people who are making it, maybe the same guy works for the oil company, he might be going to get a bonus on the other end. So it is amazingly complicated in how this all works out and who gets this money. And do you hear anybody ever try and explain that, Kevin? Do people, do you do that in class? Does anybody? I mean, it's a fascinating subject, but it's not as simple as you hear about.
First of all, that may be the longest question you've ever asked me.
Well, okay.
It's not up in class as much as it is in that. You know, when I talk to people in the industry, and so even if you if you consider this a short-term oil shock, that's not what people who are responsible for transportation are planning. So they're telling you that even if it all comes back, and we get back to where we were, we're really looking at 18 to 24 months. So. You know, I don't know if that gets specific to your question. You know, if that gives you what you want to know, but it's it is the impact of everything from the last 4 to 6 weeks is not short term.
What do you make of? I had this dug up yesterday because one of my elves here said, "Hey, Chief, you better look at this oil production here." Now, of course, it's 3 or 4 months that they're starting to turn down a little bit. And what's the Texas field? It's not the Bakken. What's the Permian? And I'm looking here at the, you can get a monthly chart here of oil production going back to, 1940, if you want. And we had, the thing here where it went up during Trump's first administration, and then it went, after COVID, it went flying down, and then it basically went up every month during Biden's administration to kind of the levels that it was in the Trump administration before the COVID thing happened. And since Trump's been in there, it's been creeping up sort of every month, really back up to old highs, maybe even higher than old highs. But now in the last 4 months, it's starting to drop, not precipitously, but like every month. Is that means that we're not finding as much new stuff in the Permian as we used to, or is this just a 1 or 2 month blip? What are we thinking on this? I mean, we're only down from, like, we got up to 13,828. Now, this doesn't include the propane and all the other stuff. The total is like 20, but this is oil coming out of the fields. Like last year, we're 13,6 in June, 13,7, 13,8, 13,8, 13,8, 13,7, 13,6, 13,2. So is that just a weather-related issue the last couple of months, or are we starting to bump into, I mean, I don't anticipate this going down to 8 or 9 or anything like that, but are we actually bumping up against our top here, I guess is my question.
Well, it's a good question. I don't know what to tell you. What are we seeing in manufacturing activity? That's a big user of oil and shipping and so on.
Well, I'm saying it. I'm looking at just what the production is, right? And again, this is when you look at this thing and then you look at what president's policies are, and everybody's all over, depending if you're the right or the left or whatever, you're always blaming the president. If you go back here to whatever, 1950, this industry is bigger than who's ever in the White House. I mean, I'm stunned that the only president, because I put the presidents here in one day, the only president we had where we were producing less when he came out than when he went in was Bush. And if ever there was a guy who was more oil happy, was that dude. And he's the only guy where when Obama was, we're doing way more when he came out. Now, I'm not saying that he liked oil, because I don't think he did. And I don't think Bush hated oil, because I don't think he did, but the numbers don't lie. It's just weird.
Yeah, so, you know, when I'm looking at ISM for, you know, what value that has, manufacturing activity is up, but let's see where it is, you know, just in some of the summary comments. Orders growing, production growing, employment contracting, which is pretty typical, which has been a trend, a long-term trend. Supplier delivery slowing, raw materials inventories contracting, customer inventories too low, prices increasing, imports growing, exports contracting. All of which is interesting, but I'm not. I'd have to go read through the detail on this to see what's going on with shipping, because shipping is really what's going to determine fuel cost as much as anything else, and oil production demand for oil as much as anything else. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's you know, the shipping commerce is going to dictate that. Not
well, Kevin. What's your read on
what you and I are willing to pay?
When you start talking to 2 years out, 18 to 2 years out, 18 to 24 months, how much of that have these guys thought through? I guess I'm trying to get a read on if, and I sure hope this happens. If everything ends in the Middle East today, in terms of people getting killed. And the strait opens up, and I don't know what normal means, but if we slide back down to something near normal, what do you think, and Carl can opine if he wants, what do you think the damage has been done on all this Iranian hitting of all these other people? I think they did some damage to the Saudi pipeline, which I don't know if that's that big of a deal, if all of a sudden they can turn around and use the Strait of Hormuz, but they did some stuff in Qatar and a couple other places. How... Do you think that's significant or not? I haven't been able to get a read on it.
Well, so this is part of the problem, is that what a lot of people, you know, this is a little different than with like refineries and things like in material handling, if you will. All right, moving the oil around, it's a little different than in the United States and the other terminal places than it is where it's being produced. What a lot of people don't understand is that oil is not, well, you do, because you know, you've been in the commodities and markets business for a long time. A lot of people think that oil is oil. You know, you go to the store, you buy a jug of engine oil to put in your engine, that's kind of sort of what comes out, that is not what comes out of the ground, right? Some of it, in some of those cases, if those wells are shut down, they literally can't be restarted. You end up having to drill another hole. So these are not, you know, this is not as simple as it seems.
Nothing in that industry is simple. It's the most complicated industry there is.
Well, and not only that, but unscheduled shutdowns. Now, if you've, you know, if you know you're running low on feedstock going into a refinery and you close everything out in a normal, you know, in a normal kind of way, the restart's not so bad. If it doesn't go down that way because somebody blew part of it up, all right, you're not talking about something that, oh, well, now, you know, we fixed that blown up pipe and there's now supply again because the, you know, the tanker just showed up. Okay, we'll just turn it back on and, you know, make some more gas and diesel. No, you won't. Might be 3 months before you can get this all of, you know, everything cleared out and restarted cleanly and all of this. So there's, you know, if you shut things down on a planned basis, then that's not so much of a problem. But when people are blowing crap up, that's usually not the case. So
I agree. I was thinking the same thing as you started the talk, is that, you know, any unplanned outage is a big problem. It doesn't matter if it's manufacturing equipment at a factory or if it's oil, you know, your oil drilling operation. Unplanned is going to be a problem, and usually it's unplanned is going to be a more severe outage than you're normally going to get with anything scheduled. So, you know, yeah, I think that's why when I go back and say, you know, people are planning for impact that's not going to be something that comes back down in 6 weeks if we stop today. They're planning for impact that is, you know, 18 months out or longer.
Well, I think the other thing that, you know, and I've, this is something I've pointed out for 20 or 30 years now, behind every unit of economic output is a unit of energy. This supply disruption is going to go through the system and isn't going to disappear, even if all of the shooting ends today, okay, and the ceasefire holds and, you know, and all this, which by the way, deeply skeptical of that's in fact going to be the case.
So am I, but I'm hoping.
But, you know, but if it happens and that's the way it works out, okay, great, except we had a serious inflationary cost side problem brewing in the PPI before this thing started. And I've been talking about it now for the last 3 months.
It's been happening for 20 years, now it's accelerating.
Well, that's exactly the point, Chief, is that it's, you know, and when you have cost push stuff going in on the producer side, there's only two options if you're one of the companies that are making things. One of them is you eat it, which hits your operating margins, and the second one is you pass it through, which hits the CPI. All right, so everybody seems to, I mean, you can't wave a magic wand. Harry Potter's wand does not exist. You can't wave this wand and make it go away. So, you know, yeah, we're going to get the CPI report, but you're on the leading edge of this, and it's going to go on for the next 6 to 12 months. Who honestly can look at that data and say, realistically, we're going to see inflation coming down? You know, there's an article said that, the Fed has been, you know, running policy into a world where inflation has been above their target for the last 5 years. Continuously, and oh, by the way, that target is illegal, but, you know, nobody cares about that. Nonetheless,
they're not going to worry about it, Carl, because they're the ones that are doing it.
Well, duh. And yeah. And yet here we are with, you know, with parts of, you know, the rate structure, well, actually the entire rate structure, that is below and has been since 2008 on a continual basis the deficit spending as a percentage of GDP. It's lunacy. Well, and yet here we are, and everyone thinks it's going to be okay. No, it's not going to be okay. I just don't know precisely when it's going to blow up in our face,
well,
but I know it will.
Well, let's. Well, we still have our man. Let's another one. Kevin, I don't know if you're getting any questions on this, or maybe you never would, but this is an article here by a guy, Sam Meredith, CNBC, and he's talking about the super El Nino, but we'll talk about that next week, Carl. But basically he's tying together, if the super El Nino essentially adds to the global food cost. Now, he's already, if you read the whole article, which I'm not going to go through, but he's talking about how the pressure's on the prices all along. And my brother, he hasn't shown it to me lately because it's actually been somewhat tame. the, I don't know, what's the word here, guys? It's not the average, the mean. Around the rest of the world where people don't have any dough, the cost to basically feed yourself every day is like $5. Something along those lines. Again, my brother knows more about this than me because he traded over into corn pits and so forth. And when the cost of it's like the porridge index, the UN porridge index. I mean, nobody thinks they actually eat porridge, but anyway, if that gets over $5, it's a cause for pretty serious unrest. And one time when it did that, that's what caused the Arab. It was coincidental, shall we say, to the Arab Spring, where everybody in all these in a bunch of different countries all kind of revolted at the same time. Now, I don't know that you could make the rigorous connection there. But the point here is, I think a lot of people in this country are at the end of their rope, so it's a little different. But theoretically, most people in this country, and again, I'm a little hedgy with this, 20 cents more in gas is not the same as somebody making $5 a day where food is now $5.50. In other words, it reaches a point where it's a political problem, not just a cost problem. We may be getting that way here to a certain extent, but not at the base level, I think, that where a lot of the rest of the world is. So if that happens, now what do you think happens? We've already got 15 wars going on, and not all the ones we started are all over the place, where people are stealing dough, other people don't have any money. I mean, it seems like it's getting worse and not better. Is it just me? Maybe we've caused, I don't like the way we did it, but maybe actually we caused somewhat of a solution forming in Venezuela, although I'm reserving judgment on that too. But are we putting out fires, I guess, quicker than they're starting? And if you start getting a worldwide food inflation, I think more fires are going to start than anybody can put out. Or is that just being crazy?
Well, no, I don't think it's crazy. And I think, here's the other problem. At some point, this starts causing serious political problems, even in places like here.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think we're there on that. All right. I mean, a lot of people are going to say, "Oh, that's conspiracy nonsense." But the history is replete with various nations thinking that this kind of stuff is no big deal and finding out the hard way that it is. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess we're in the educational system. Kevin, I'm not so sure you, when I say you guys, Kevin was 2 years behind me in school. I remember all kinds of classes essentially being taken over freshman year by politics and Vietnam War talk. I mean, now 2-3 years later, it had subsided enough to where nobody was getting drafted and going to Vietnam to where it kind of played its way down. But right now, I think we're on the cusp. If we don't fix some stuff pretty quick here, and I don't think the Fed coming out today and the administration saying don't worry about this 1% rise in CPI, which appears to be coming at 7:30, don't worry about it. It's all oil. It'll go right back down. I don't know if people are going to believe that. I mean, certainly nobody my age would, because I saw these people bullshitting back in the 70s and it was all bullshit. And I have a different view of it because I saw people doing, heard people doing it.
Yeah, I think it's this whole thing that has gone on with Minnesota and that was uncovered there with the Medicaid fraud and the Leering centers and fun stuff like this. Everybody wants to try to try to pigeonhole that into being those damn Democrats, right? The problem is that it was exactly this process that was driving up the cost of living I could see it. I track my own spending, all right? I use personal finance software to track where all this goes. And when you start seeing double-digit annualized increases in certain areas that are essentially mandatory, things you must buy, okay? Car insurance.
Yep.
You want to drive? You got to have car insurance. You got a house? Well, unless you can afford to, go hire the bulldozer if there's a fire, okay, and ignore it, guess what else you have to buy, right? So when non-discretionary costs like that get shoved into the system, then they start reflecting everywhere else because every business has those expenses too.
if the cost of a roof goes from $8,000 to $30,000, and you say, oh God, that sucks, but I only need to do that every 20 years. Well, guess what? The guy down the street who runs a bar has a roof on his business too, right?
Yep.
And so, this starts to show up in every area of everything. A lot of people like to point to that, well, all this crazy stuff that went on during COVID is where a lot of these spikes came from. All right, fine. Well, guess what? COVID's been over for several years now, and have any of them been taken back out of the economy and prices?
Well, they haven't withdrawn any of the money they put in.
Well, I understand that, but point being, none of it's come back out, right?
No.
Now, from a consumer point of view, none of it's come back out. Now, you and I and Kevin and Hal, we know why it hasn't come back out, because it's a math problem when you get down to it. But on the other hand, all I got to do is look at the data, and this didn't start with a virus showing up. The virus was an excuse to crank it up to,
it was already happening. It was happening really since 2000 and surely since 2008.
Well, actually not. I mean, 2000, there was a couple of years where Fed funds was below the rate of federal deficit spending. That was the cause of the housing bubble. And then they tried to take that back. Then you got the crash in 2008, and since then it's been non-ending. Okay, now we live in a world today, Chief, where if you're in business of some kind, whether it's investments or anything else, you literally, a significant percentage of the population has never lived in a world where that's not true.
Well, that's right, and they have no idea. What I know for me, because I talk to people, they have no idea what I'm talking about, except if somebody's like really old and remembers the 60s, but older than me. I mean, they understand.
You know what, in the 1960s, that was never the case. All you got to do is pull the data up. Fred.
As soon as, I'll say 60s, before 68 and after.
No, all the way back to the 1950s, I've got the graph.
I'm saying, the major shift came to Vietnam War and going off the gold standard. That's when it all started. The only difference back then was, and I don't know, to this day, and Hal, I keep asking him, and he's our genius, I don't understand. I mean, even though the government is more powerful, or maybe they're just smarter. In those days, when they started pouring money in the system, people recognized that inflation was going up. And if they were going to lend money to people, they sort of demanded a lot of money back, because you knew the dollar you were going to get back at the end of the year was only worth 90 cents. Somehow this time, they've managed to keep a lid on that. And I think it has to do with the Fed putting $5 trillion in the balance sheet, that anytime you essentially sold a bond, they bought it from you. And I think they specifically did what you're talking about, you and Hal.
Yeah.
It was, because otherwise, I mean, right now, if we have inflation, let's say it's 6, which I think would be nice. I think it'd be worse than that. Let's say it's at 6. You should be able to go into the bank or go to the and get yourself a CD for 8.5.
Yeah,
I mean, it's as simple as that. And
well,
you haven't been able to. So the people, the regular people, and I actually know a few of these people that worked their ass off their whole life, actually got $1 million in their like 401k. 6-7 years ago, and pretty much had it all in cash. I think their $1 million is worth 600 now.
Well, this is so. One of the things
when I say cash, I'm saying in the bank earning 1%.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I get that. All right, but I mean, one of the things. This is an issue that comes up for people all the time. Kevin's dropped off, by the way. He just sent a thing that said he had to go. When you look at what do you do as you go through life and you go from, I can go get a better job and, try to stay ahead of it like that, which, by the way, doesn't work over time.
Only if you are...
For the top 5% in any field, it works. For everybody else, it does not.
I hate to split hairs here, but I think the world maybe should split hairs a little more. If you're doing the same job... The answer is no. But if you went to another class, now you can do a better job and you move up in a pay scale. That's different, right?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, there's a difference. So,
but if you stay as a, I'll use the term, a cost accountant for 30 years, it's one thing. If you go get your MBA and now you can do other stuff and you do other stuff, you should get paid more, correct? There's nothing to do with getting a raise for doing what you originally did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But here's the thing. And as I've pointed out to people before, you know, the
how many people do you think we have saying, what the hell's a cost accountant?
You know, like, you know, nobody, right? What else is new?
What are those guys? What do they do?
Yeah, what do they do? Exactly. But, you know, I've had these kinds of conversations with younger people. When I lived in Florida, this was something that, you know, every now and then I was asked to do this because I was non-traditional, let's say, right? In that, you know, I went to college for a couple of years, quit because I was making more money than... it was costing me to go. There was no value proposition in continuing to get the degree, and I don't regret that decision. And by the way, if I'd continued the program that I was in, they would have taught me a bunch of stuff that 5 years later was absolutely worthless. So I would have really gotten screwed. But at least I was paying for it in cash. I wasn't in debt. So, you know, there was no sword of Damocles hanging over my head that, you know, I've got to make these $500 a month payments, otherwise, you know, really bad stuff starts happening. So walking away was just a sunk cost. It was the money I'd put in, and it's gone, but no forward problem. Today, that's not true, all right, because you can't spin pieces and go to school anymore. No. That's off the table. So now,
which it shouldn't be, by the way, but it is.
Well, but it is, and it's again, you know, and this is one of the things, you and I have talked about this a bunch, Chief, and that's that you put money into the system like this, you run this kind of a scam, and it is a scam, all right, on the American public. You tell, oh, no, inflation is contained, inflation expectations are fine, which is a complete load of nonsense. But then the problem is you can't control where it goes. Now, the people in the banks, the people in the stock market, hey, they love it when it's there. Realtors love it when it's in houses because they get paid a percentage on their commission.
Okay, but okay. Now, remember...
Well, now hold on.
Right, but this is what's different about this time, and I hate to keep bringing this up, but the last time this happened, and this is why I keep trying to educate, I'm going to be on Joel's podcast today. In 1968, I think the Dow made it to... I don't know if it peaked its head above 1,000, or it didn't, it was 69, somewhere in there. It did not go through 1,000 again until 1982. Because at some point, the interest rates went up from whatever to like 12 or 13 or 14 or 15%. Nobody would have put their money in the market if you can get 12% in the bank.
Well,
and the market never moved. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you know, people talk today, like, you know, just goofballs on TV. You got to be in the market. It always goes up. Got to be in the market. I'll tell you what. If I would have walked into a party, a garden party with a glass of wine and my pinky in the air in 1981, and I said, you know, I'm going to go down to the bank, and I'm going to take my money out of my 16% CD. I'm going to try and find my mutual fund guy who's probably painting houses somewhere, and I'm going to put my money in the market. I think first I would have been cut off from the bar,
right?
Maybe tossed out and maybe pummeled or something. I mean, you can't imagine that, and yet of anybody making that statement, it's a total mirror image of today. What do you mean? What do you mean you're going to sell your stock? It goes up every year, and you're not getting anything in the bank. I mean, but if you would have done what that guy did back then, and now did the reverse move today, you wouldn't get as much crap, but you'd get a bunch. What a great trade!
The thing is, this too shall pass works both for and against you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, everyone thinks this too shall pass only applies when things are terrible, right? Well, guess what? That's not how it works.
Well, you know, before we go to break, because we're going to break early because we're going to do the CPI number.
Yeah.
Interesting thing. I went back, and I shouldn't do this, Carol, because one thing is I've confessed to everybody on the show and the listeners. It is impossible for me, and I think anybody with a an open or questioning mind. I can't go research anything now to get an answer without coming up with four more questions.
Oh yeah,
but I went back to I'm trying to recall this stuff, you know, back from way a long time ago, and I have a pretty good memory, but it's not that good. I started in it was either December of 80 or January of 81, right about the turn of the year there.
Right.
And the interest rates were, like, you know, I said, 15%. The Dow was at 800 or something. Or wasn't quite that low. But in the next 18 months, I'm sitting there going, as a young guy, going, you know what? This market's got to go up. I mean these companies that are managing to hang in here are paying like a 10% dividend, for God's sakes, that are obviously making money. All we have to do is get one tick down in this, you know, these rates, and the market's going to, you know, I don't know about sale, because there's nobody. And yet, over the next 18 months, your CD rates actually came down from 15 to like 12.5.
Yeah.
So it was already happening. And yet,
right,
in my first 18 months in the business, the Dow went down another 20%.
Yeah.
So even though it had already started, you know, people. And here, since we came out of the COVID stuff, we've already have 10-year rates that were like, what, 1.5, that are now pushing 4.5.
Right.
Yet the markets, it's already happening, yet the market's a lot higher.
Right.
So I'm sitting there going, I'm not predicting this. I mean, we still have people long as much as they want to be. And, God, don't say you weren't warned.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, let's go to break and we'll come back for these numbers. We're doing this early. S&P futures up 4. NASDAQ futures up 34. We're treading water here. We'll give a complete rundown where everybody is, and then we'll get these CPI numbers.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, no thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howard. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 450. NASDAQ futures up 34. Not much crazy going on. We got Caterpillar up 7. Caterpillar, big day again yesterday. This Caterpillar flies up and down with all this news. But it's been really bullish the last couple days. We've got Meta up 391. We got Microsoft up 43 cents. So everything is kind of... Sherwin-Williams down 270. I know people aren't going to paint. You know, so what's going on there? Over in Europe, DAX up 180. It's 0.7%. FTSE up 36.3. CAC around up 57.7. So still bullish over there. Asia, Nikkei up 1,000, 1.8%. Hang Seng up 141.6%. Shanghai up 20.5%. Not sure why that Nikkei's run up so much with what they're paying for this oil. But we got the Bund. The Bund is unchanged at 3.02. 10-year here, 4.29. So it's unchanged as well. You probably will see that change when this CPI number comes out. Japan, 2.44. Oil, down a dime, 97.77, so under 100. Brent down 16 cents, 95.76, so quite a bit under the 110 or something we spiked to. RBOB unchanged at 2999, so say $3. Gold down 26 bucks, 47.91. Silver down 51 cents at a pretty good rally yesterday, 75.92. Foreign exchange, this is moving all over the place. We're up to 117 now, and the euro's up to 117. It was down to like 115.5. Now it's back up again. British pound, 134.5. Was down almost to 132.5. And we talk about CPI. We get Carl's view on if you're in an international business, what 1% and 2% moves in currency does to you. It's a Bitcoin up 38 bucks, 72,086. Ricky, good morning, Forest Traffic, Weather, Sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:30 here in Chicago. We're looking at 60 degrees right now with a high of 67. A shower in spots early this morning, otherwise breezy with increasing amounts of sunshine. Tonight will be occasional rain, which can lead to poor visibility, ponding, and travel delays. The low tonight will be 43 degrees.
Isn't ponding puddles?
Yeah, puddling, ponding, or puddling. Yeah, there you go.
This ponding is a new term.
Yeah. Phoenix, weather in Phoenix, 71 degrees right now with a high of 94. Very warm with intervals of clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be becoming cloudy with a low of 68 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, super quick. Accident reported on right shoulder of Dan Ryan northbound at Pershing Road, exit 55B, causing heavy traffic from West Garfield Boulevard all the way up. There's another accident reported on southbound on Stevenson at Damon Avenue, exit 290. Overall, traffic inbound is looking pretty heavy, so live with time and patience. Let's talk sports real quick. MLB, Diamondbacks beat Mets 7-1. White Sox beat Royals 2-0. And today we got Pirates at Cubs at 1:20 p.m., Diamondbacks at Phillies at 5:40 p.m., and White Sox at Royals at 6:40 p.m. Yesterday we had Blackhawks losing to Hurricanes 7-2, and Bulls beating Wizards 119-108. Today we got Magic at Bulls at 7 p.m. and Suns at Lakers 9:30 p.m. Back over to you guys.
So, Carl, when did offsides become encroachment, and when did standing water on the pavement become ponding?
Oh, God. I don't know. By the way.
This is progress, bud.
Yeah, right. 0.9.
Which is, by the way, what everybody changed to yesterday as the official right. prediction. It went from the 1 down to 0.9.
Right. And, of course, here's... You want to talk about stuff that you just don't believe.
By the way, the unadjusted is 1. Adjusted is 0.9. So now the unadjusted the last 3 months was 0.4, 0.5, and 1. The adjusted is 2, 3, and 9. So we're like 6/10 of a point behind now in the unadjusted to the adjusted.
Right. And by the way, the future is sort of, it didn't greatly like it. I mean, the instant spike was, another, it was like 20 handles, but now like half that's bled back off. Let me just read the second paragraph, okay? The index for energy rose 10.9% in March, led by a 21.2% increase in the index for gasoline, which accounted for 3/4 of the monthly all items increase. Chief, what complete load of crap do you have to swallow to believe that the price of gas only went up by 21%?
Well, it went from 3-something to 4-something. I got it. I got the unadjusted, by the way, is 24.90.
By the way, just for, it was a 60% increase here.
Okay.
Okay. Not 20, 21, all right? 21% happened in the first, 2.5 hours when I was up north at the time skiing. And by the way, that was in February.
By the way, I screwed up here, Carl. I should have run off last month's, which would show me the unadjusted versus the adjusted, because last month, gasoline was up 11.7. This is before the war. And it was adjusted down to 5.2. So now they've unadjusted 24.9 and it's adjusted down to 21.7. So we're talking about 7% difference now between the unadjusted and the adjusted. When does this start to even out? Ever?
Chief, diesel went from right around 3 to 5.59 here.
Well, now,
is that 21%?
All right, specific question for the walking encyclopedia, Carl. Are these pump prices or are this RBOB?
This is consumer price index.
All right, so every time gasoline...
When I go to the store, how much do I pay for something?
Okay, but what I'm saying is if gas goes up 20%, here it's 22 because you got a 10% tax on it. Which is counted, the 20 or the 22, I guess is my question.
Well, the taxes would be included.
You think so?
It had better be. It's consumer prices.
Okay. But I'm with you on that. I just because you and I think it would be logical doesn't make it so.
By the way, the unadjusted percentage change in motor fuel, gasoline, all types, 25.
Yeah. That's
okay. And the unadjusted for fuel oil, which, of course, they don't call motor fuel, but it is for trucks, duh, right, 29.4. Now,
that's the only one where the adjusted is actually higher. It's got,
yeah,
they got
30.7. Right, exactly. But the here's the interesting thing. Okay, now this is the, boy, you want to talk about getting your wig peeled back. The March 25 to 26 numbers for fuel oils plus 44.2.
Well,
all right. Now, the gasoline number is 18.9.
It's year over year.
Yeah, yeah, annualized.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And you know, this stuff, and then here's the other one that's good. So piped gas service plus 6.4. Chief, I got a gas bill, and now, of course, it's come back down because, you know, nobody's using all that much of it to heat now, right? Because winter's over, essentially, right? I got a gas bill that when I put the adjustment in, when I put the cost per therm number in, it shifted the changeover calculation on my software that my computer calculates where the correct place is to use either gas or use the heat pump, right? And it's, I mean, it's a math problem. Right?
Yep.
You want to use whichever one's cheaper to heat the house, right?
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, I get the bill in January. I put the figure in because it had spiked up so high. It actually dropped the changeover temperature by 10 degrees.
But you're not. See, you're not as clever on some of this stuff as the utilities are. As clever as you are, they're always ahead of you. That's why my brother.
Well, they may be ahead of me, but guess who got it in the back door, as it, you know, and so did everybody else that, you know, that used gas to heat the house and didn't have the choice. All right, so you know, I mean, my system adjusted for it as best it could. As a result, my total bill between gas and electric was considerably less than a bunch of people that were screaming about it here.
But your gas bill, when I say your gas bill, slice it in half. There's the gas, and there's the bullshit.
Oh, no, I understand all that. Yeah,
but I mean,
yeah,
in Chicago now, the gas part goes up and down, and, you know, they'll get you with that, too. But it's nowhere near as let's say, about to make you as pissed off as the other stuff.
Oh, you know what? See, this is why you shouldn't live in Illinois, all right? Where I live, all right, I have a meter charge, which is not just the meter, it's also the pipe to get the gas to the house.
It's a service charge.
Right. It's a service charge. And it's invariant with how much you use. And then there's a cost per therm.
Right.
And that's it.
That's kind of what it is here. But I mean, my point is the service charge, I mentioned this before, in my very old building, there's 4 meters. One pipe, 4 meters. And oh, by the way, is one of the gas guys came to check the meters, it's a pain in the ass, accused me of owning a house next door, which is like a million. Yeah. Evidently, when the pipe comes in, the stuff's so old, it splits off into the house next door as well, and they have their own meter.
Okay.
So there's, he says, you know, you own a house next door. I said, well, no, I don't. I wish I did. I kind of wish I did, you know.
That's
like a million.
Nice place,
it's a lot and a half. It's a $1 million shack, right? And maybe more. And the guy goes, well, you got this gas pipe. It's got your address down as the guy next door. And I go, he's got his own address. What are you talking? Anyway, there's 5 meters coming off this 110-year-old pipe. Every one of them is $50 a month. They haven't replaced that pipe since God knows who is president.
I mean, oh, no, I know. And
you know, then there's that charge. There's the underground storage in the summertime where they put it underground to store it for the winter. I mean, I'm going to say in the summertime, my $55 bill is there's zero gas because of the hot water heaters on the people downstairs.
Right.
There's zero gas. If I don't even turn the stove on, there's zero. And then the bill's still $55.
See, this is the, again, this is why you live in the wrong state because, when I lived in Florida, the power bill had the same thing, right? You had the meter charge, right? And then you had 6 lines of you know, electricity, fuel cost adjustment, this cost adjustment, that cost adjustment, this, that, the other.
But at least it was a co-op. So, you know, I'm still, by the way, like 3 months ago, I actually got a check from the co-op for a like 4 year prior capital cost recovery that they didn't actually spend everything that was in there, right? I mean, that's how, you know, it's a mutual company. So when that happens, you actually get a check. I mean, okay, it was a couple of beers. It wasn't a lot of money, but still, yeah, I mean, I'm still getting them. And I haven't lived there in 5 years now. But here, cost per kilowatt hour is 12 cents. Period.
Okay.
And how it all breaks down, and again, it's a nonprofit. Okay, it's CUB. It's the Knoxville Utilities Board that does my power.
But you still probably, if you had a big enough thing, there's still probably a surge charge and things like that.
Well, if you're on commercial service, then you get the demand charges. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, that's commercial service is totally different, all right? And I've tried to explain this to people because, you know, I used to run a company and we used to get those, right? And believe me, they suck. But hey, I understand why, because when it's in the middle of August and my data center full of computers, along with the air conditioning, get the heat out of the room so everything doesn't melt, has to run, and it's 110 degrees outside, I can't shut it off. So yeah, I get billed for the infrastructure load that I impose on the system, because not just the power. You had to put an extra transformer in and two extra lines in order to, you know, be able to deliver that power reliably. Okay, guess what? I get to pay for that.
Well, I know. I used to live in not a high rise, but pretty high. You know, yeah. The last thing they wanted to do was get like an 80-degree day in March,
right?
Where you had to turn the air conditioning on, knowing you were going to turn it off again and turn the heat back on. You wanted to only turn it on once and leave it on, because the surge was so dramatic. Anyway, let's dig a little more through these. And when it comes down to who's hurt on this stuff, it is so, let's say in this country, I mean, if I want to be snide, I could say right now a big winner is Trump's buddy who bought the refineries down on the Gulf Coast.
No, you think?
Out of bankruptcy, and now he's getting Venezuelan oil. Well, but say it's not even a Trump guy. Say all of a sudden, for whatever reason, there's a typhoon in Brazil or Argentina, and it knocks out, you know, 20% of the corn crop or soybean crop.
Right.
All of a sudden in this country, now the price of, let's say, soybeans runs up 30%. Goes from $15 a bushel to 20.
Yeah.
Okay, now somebody here, meaning you and me, we're going to start paying for whatever we use in soybeans. We're going to start paying $20 to somebody. Well, if somebody is going to be the farmer in the next county, who's going to get the 20?
Right.
So in terms of inflation, as long as the Fed stays doing what they're supposed to do, which they haven't done in 25 years, if they stay doing, there's no net inflation.
Well, yeah, because somebody gets and somebody gets.
Somebody gets and somebody loses.
Right.
And same thing in this country to a certain extent with this oil. Even though I think I'd rather have it in my pocket than Trump's buddy, but it's not the same as some country where they need oil to dry their corn and now don't have it. Where right. when they give the money up, it's going to Chevron, it's going to Iraq, Iran, wherever the hell it's going to go. Then all of a sudden now it's different. Now you have a worldwide shift. Japan's probably the number one on that one, because I don't think Japan has any oil, do they? If they do, they have very
basically,
little.
Well, basically zero. I mean, it was the whole reason World War II happened, was that we blockaded their fuel. And I mean, that's a disaster for them, because they have essentially no native source. They have to import all of it.
Well, that's why they went to, who's got a bunch of oil? It's not the Philippines. Somebody down there has got a bunch of oil where they went and tried to, did conquer the place. Anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, there's that. Then you have... But here's the other thing. The other amusing part of this is, and one of the things that this has shown up, is, I don't know if you saw this, but Starner is screaming about, how badly Great Britain is, you know, is getting hosed by all this stuff with Iran and, you know, and the interdiction of supply coming through, through the Hormuz and all this. And my answer to them is, you know what? You need to STFU. Just sit down and shut the F up, because you have more oil than God off your coast. And for green energy crazy reasons, you've decided you ain't going to go get it.
Okay, but
guess what? Now there's a price to that, and you're pissed at someone else.
Well, I mean, we do have two countries, and again, I'm never going to say anything nice about Iran. We have two countries who have decided to do this, us and Israel.
Yeah.
And other people are sitting there going, I don't know that it needed to happen last week. And look, by the way, it's really affected us. But the thing of it is our people, I think, are either too greedy or too dumb to realize all this, how this all piles together. Because now we're spending all this money over there. Now, again, and I've said the same thing about Bush, Obama, whoever the hell the people might have been, Bush won. If when you go to war, and there are all kinds of people benefit from that, and other people get killed, there's going to be a cost. And one day, I wanted Bush to do it. I want this guy. I don't think Hegseth is capable of doing it. Coming up and saying, okay, we're going to spend X, and oh, by the way, we're broke, so from now on, for the next 3 years till we settle this all, you're going to have a 20% increase in your federal income tax. I have a feeling we wouldn't be there.
Well, I'm. You know what, Chief? My basic problem with all of this is that these things all end up being convenient for somebody who is facing down a problem in the economic picture. Right now, in the couple of months before, you and I, we have this conversation every time the PPI and the CPI numbers come out. And as I pointed out, going back to the beginning of the year, these there were real cost push problems in these reports. All right. And by the way, most of it had absolutely nothing to do with energy. Well, indirectly it did. But it's all being driven by this insanity with these hyperscalers and this AI crap. Right, and I'll just give you one quick example.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, obviously I'm going to let you say that, but it also has to do with the endemic issue with not allowing competitive people in the businesses.
But here's the thing. All right, so I'll just give you one example. In November of last year, I had some storage expansion requirements that I could reasonably foresee that I would have to buy more disk drives, bigger ones, to replace some of the ones I had online here in the next 3 to 6 months. All right, so got a decent price, went ahead and did it, bought them, put them in service in November. So it's a business expense. Fine. I went and I looked at those just a couple of days ago. They're 50% more expensive.
Yep.
Now, same exact device. Now, for 30 years, in every area of technology, all the way back to when I was running MCS, and even before then, when MCS used to be a PC company and networking, pulling cables for terminals, for Christ's sakes, back before there was an internet, all the way back to there, my entire professional life, technology has only gone in one direction for equivalent capacity, and that's down in price, okay? With unbroken chain all the way back to the point that you end up having to have this new, now we have capital expensing for, because of the big, beautiful bag of barf or whatever. There's always been a limited amount of it. If you're doing small stuff at a business scale, you don't get bit by this so bad. But when you're doing things at large scale, like I was when I was running my internet company, when Clinton did that for a couple of years, it was a really big deal, okay, in terms of tax exposure. Being able to expense capital stuff like that rather than having to put it on a depreciation schedule was a huge thing. And okay, fine. However, the reality of it is the problem is that the reason the price keeps coming down like that is because the stuff I bought 4 years ago is worth zero a year and a half down the road.
Oh, yeah.
All right, if I try to sell it, it's worth nothing. I have discarded more old disk drives over my years in this business than you can count. And it's not because they don't work. They work perfectly well. It's because there's it literally makes no sense from an energy consumption point of view and taking up space in the rack to have them in the system anymore. You take them out, you put the newer ones in because they use less power and they're four times the size. So, you know, you're out of your mind to run the old ones. And this now has hard reversed. Boxes that I used to recommend that people buy, and I publish firewall software for small businesses and individuals that want to, you know, do that kind of thing. I give it away. Don't charge anybody anything for it. You can download it off my site. Those little boxes that were capable of handling fiber connections into a house or small business, you could buy them for $140 all day long last year. Okay, a couple of them I bought one of just to test to make sure that, you know, that they were suitable. The nearest comparable device that does this today is over $300.
Is that because of less companies?
No, it's because the components that go into there, the memory and everything else, because of this crazy bullshit with AI, has eaten up all the supply, and those chips are in everything. All right? So as a result, the cost of these machines for comparable equipment has more than doubled. So if you want to hire somebody today and put a computer on their desk and you go to buy that machine, it's twice what it was.
Yeah, it's really... That's, well, right?
And, that, and people think this kind of stuff... You know, people are like, oh, well, you know, these kind of skills...
It's all part of the you know, and the right-wingers on the show will give me some long story about how the networks and all these news medias, all they do is just pick on the poor president, and they're all left-wing. I think that the general brainwashing, and I use that term, but it is an old term, huh? And if you talk to somebody about inflation, I want my squirt gun watch again.
Yep.
Immediately coming out of somebody's mouth is, yeah, man, look at gas. Everybody is we're like Pavlov's dog.
I know.
To look at the price of gas. And yet, I'm going to say for a regular person, and I can still do the math in my head, the average person probably does, what, 12,000 miles a year?
Yeah, well, I don't, but...
Okay, but I'm saying in the average car gets, let's say, 20 miles at a gallon, so we're talking, where are we at? We're at 600 gallons of gas?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the price of gas goes up, you know, 20 cents a gallon. I mean, what is it? $300? $200?
Yeah, it's on the other hand, okay, so I look at it a different way.
Okay, say it's up $1. It's $600. It's what everybody is being told to focus on. And maybe because every time you fill up, the prices are right there, and it's obvious. I mean, it's not like I ignore it. I don't. But
no,
I mean,
it's in your face.
Right,
which
it's
is
in your
why
but
it
I'm
matters.
Saying it has nothing to do with people's inflation unless you're an over-the-road truck driver. Like the roof that's now 60 when it was 20, or
right.
I mean, I look at here at another one that, you know, and there's, as I go down the list here, there's stuff to, you know, I don't know. I'm going to be nice and say the people that know their shit do a good job here. I'm looking at used cars and trucks, and I just as a hobby, if there was a boring minute in the day, I go look up the price of, you know, old pickup trucks and Suburbans and stuff. It's just something stupid I do. I mean, it's not like, and I'm not proud of it. I just do it, right? And used cars and trucks in the last year, they got down 3.2%. I'm going to say if that number
Well, that's
is,
a complete load of crap.
If that number isn't up 10 or 12, I mean, I'll go naked down the street. I mean, it's insane. I mean, I'm talking about if you bought a 2005 truck, pickup truck, 3 years ago at like 12 grand or something or 13 grand and you put 30,000 miles on it, if you can't get more than you bought for it, something's wrong. I mean, it's insane how much the old stuff has gone up. What do you suppose the price of a...
Well, Chief, there was just a report out a couple days ago that these are facts. It's from the Mannheim guys that run most of the auto auctions. Right, when you trade a car in, 95% of the time the dealer doesn't keep that thing in resale.
No, they just kick it out.
Yeah, it goes into the Mannheims. You know, Mannheim runs those auctions across most of the United States. They're by far the largest player. And the report was basically, watch out, because prices at the wholesale level at those auctions are skyrocketing on the used side.
Well, you know, there's actually a middle tier there. And maybe if you didn't know anybody, but Audrey's cousin.
No, there is.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, he owned a used car place.
Yeah.
And what you wanted is you have a big dealer that you turn in your car, and if it's cherry, I use their term, they'll clean it up and put it on their lot.
Okay. Right.
If it's kind of crummy, like you say, it just goes right to the auction. If it's in the middle.
Yeah, there's
a middle where like Eddie would want a big dealer to say, hey, I got these five cars yesterday, do you want them?
Right.
And he would give them more than the auction. If they needed a cleaning or whatever, he'd detail them, and if they needed something, a couple of new springs, he'd throw them on. That's why these guys, sometimes in the used car guys, that's where they get their cars. They're not
right. The
auction crap, but they're not the cherry either.
Right.
But yeah, these numbers, I was going to this morning, I'm going to get in here in time, and I don't know if I can even find it. I was going to run, try and find out the cost to rebuild a Chevy Silverado transmission in 2020 versus today.
Oh,
God. I'll bet it was 1,000 and now it's 4,500. You think I'm right on that? These are the things that...
Well, there's actually some people I know that do that. I haven't asked that question, but maybe I will.
Because, I mean everybody sees the gas. Everybody sees the price of chicken.
Right.
You know, you see the price of beef going through more than the other stuff. But I mean.
Oh, by the way, they supposedly that went down.
Really?
Supposedly, if you believe that.
I go to this place. It's an interesting spot. I love going there because the clientele is bizarre.
Supposedly, last month, beef and veal were down, and meats in general were down. Supposedly.
Well, I got meat, poultry, fish, and eggs down 9.3% and year over year 0.9%.
Yeah, well, you know, gee, this is what they say, right? They never lie.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is you don't... that for a regular person, it's real dough, especially if you got a bigger family. It's even more dough. But it's kind of not the same as the air conditioning going out. What do you mean, 10 grand? It's supposed to be four.
Yeah, or God forbid, you know, well, and part of that was driven by this crap that got put into place with our last administration, where they for the third or fourth time outlawed the refrigerant that was being used.
Yeah.
Supposedly because it's bad for the environment. The truth is, the reason they outlawed it is the patent expired, and so all of a sudden the cost of fixing, you know, you got a bad coil. Well, guess what? That means you have to have the unit recharged right after you put the new coil in. All of a sudden. The cost of those older units. I mean, I changed mine a few years ago, not because it was dead, but because the coil was in very poor condition, and as a result of the previous round of this crap, a recharge was going to be like $1,500.
Well, they're more
just
like...
to get the gas.
Yeah, they're more... Well, that's what those guys pay. I actually have a current one in my building that I have to replace. Now, it's 18 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
Now the refrigerant, the guy says, "Well, if we put it in there, it's like $400 or $500, like you say." And by the way, if we put the dye in there to find out where it's leaking, probably we can fix that. And then you got to recharge it again, which is another four or five or whatever. And oh, by the way, now you're sitting here with a 20-year-old unit or 18-year-old unit,
right.
Where a whole new one is going to cost you four.
Right.
And you sit there and go, it doesn't take long to not to do the math and say, well, what if they find two leaks and I'm up to $1,500 or $2,000 on this old thing, well, even though it's probably fixable, it doesn't look like it's dead, but I'm better off with the new one and hoping I get 10 years out of that before I have to call the guy back. I mean,
well, that was basically the math, was that, you know, okay, I changed the coil and then 6 months from now the compressor goes locked rotor. Right, or you know, something like that, right? Or or the evaporator springs a leak, or you know, I mean, there's, and I'm like, that doesn't make any damn sense. Besides,
since you can't make the old refrigerant anymore, the price for that is only going to go in one direction.
Well, it seems like, I don't know, this is certainly in this, the city here, you know, and maybe it's part racial, I don't know. Of everybody thinks that other people seem to have an unlimited supply of money, but you certainly feel that in Washington. Maybe it's because they do, because they're stealing it.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, the government's idea of how much money other people have seems to be really off since maybe Truman left office, because he didn't have much. I mean, it almost, you'd like to see, you know, a new constitution where the president would have to like buy something once a week, or be in a store, or do something. I mean, I don't think, I mean, one of the most interesting parts about it, as I read more about World War II and Roosevelt, and I'll kind of close with this, is that he spent, partially because he had polio and couldn't really walk anywhere, he spent an amazing amount of time and effort finding himself informational sources outside the White House that wrote directly to him, and he would read, you know, the equivalent of a novel a day, you know, which you're not going to accuse this guy of doing, or the last three guys.
I was going to say that's...
No, that's not... We're not even talking about the same playing field, but we're saying is that they actually absolutely wanted to know what was going on. They didn't want the filtered crap. I mean, Roosevelt sent his... Well, who knows if it was his wife's girlfriend or whatever, all around the country in a car with a driver and a guard for 4 months, writing back from all these, you know... Imagine the roads back in the 1930-something she's bouncing along on, and writing back, oh, man, the sharecroppers are, this is what's happened to them, the coal miners. And he had a steady flow of information. Even though he had probably good people around him, he didn't count on them to give him the information. I mean, you wonder, I mean, obviously it didn't look like Biden got out too much. I don't know if this guy, I mean, his idea getting out is going down to having a multi-million-dollar trip to Mar-a-Lago to play golf. I mean, that's not exactly caring about the rest of us. I mean... And I'm not saying, you know, Obama was much better. I mean, he might have been a little tied because at least he had daughters. But, I mean, I don't think they have a clue, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, it's the thing that I think people have to pay a great deal of attention to is that, you know, I've had plenty of people over the years tell me, well, you know, this is going to go Zimbabwe level, you know, type of stuff, right? And they won't correct it rather than, you know, it's like there was, at one point, the central bank people, I guess, from Zimbabwe, somebody said, well, you know, why did you do this? You knew where it was going. He said, well, that's what I was ordered to do. Okay. You're okay.
Hey, you know what?
But you know what? There's a difference here, Chief, because you had a mostly, you didn't have a lot of density there. You had a largely agrarian capable society to a large degree, right? You didn't end up with half the population literally starving because they couldn't buy food.
Well, except that the agricultural area was the area that was in a total depression long before there was a depression.
I understand that, okay, but the point being is that if you had something like that happen in the United States, for real, Chicago would be a literal free fire war zone within 48 hours.
Probably.
All right. Well, yeah. Absolutely. All right, because you can't. I could be, you know, 70% self-sufficient on food production on my, you know, little suburban lot here. 90% of the people inside a major American city, forget about it.
Oh, they have none. Yeah, none whatsoever.
Yeah, zero, right? I mean, you could even grow a set of tomatoes, for Christ's sakes.
No.
So, yeah. So if that kind of thing happens, the only answer you're going to have out of 90% of the population within those population centers is violence.
Well, I don't disagree. So now we have this number, and it's
right.
We raised it to one, we dropped it to point now. Now I guess we're sort of happy with it because it's all going away the next couple of months. When are we going to wake up on this?
Look, the move that you've seen in the last few days. You know, I pointed out a couple of weeks ago that when the rumor mill stuff started and every single thing, you know, the future spiked 30 handles, 50 handles, whatever, right? And of course, there's a hell of a lot of front running going on. Gee, you think, right? You
know, there's not only front running, but there's people who pull every offer the minute they see it.
Well, yeah, I mean, but there's, you know, clearly when you have a pattern repeatedly where those spikes come, and then 5 minutes later, you know, Trump posts something on True Social,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
If you think someone didn't tell someone, you know, you're out of your effing mind.
But also, we'll continue with this on Tuesday. Also, the fabric of the market has learned to anticipate that. There's,
oh, no, I understand.
So there's that. No, there's no way. I mean, the NASDAQ futures now are trading up 54 or 25,306.
Right.
Unless I have a client who is long them or is long calls, I would never, say, put a standing order in even $50 above the market.
Right, because of the spike. Because, right through it, screw it.
Yeah, because
right.
the second you get filled, you're going to feel like you were hosed. Now, if you were long calls, and you're covered, and you just lock in a profit there, now that's another whole story.
Well, then that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you happen to be long them, that's nice too. But
no. But all I'm pointing out here is that this is this Pavlovian thing is extremely dangerous.
So hugely dangerous.
You know what? When you get into a market where I am so scared of not being in if this war ends.
Well, you also have people who think it can only happen to the upside. Listen to time.
Exactly the problem, right? Is nothing can ever go wrong. Oh boy, I don't like that.
Well, let's continue with that on Tuesday. I'm on with Joel today from 9 to 9:30. It's always fun.
Cool.
I actually got to show my face though.
Yeah, well,
you know it's a.
Well, that's a problem.
I could be like Mike Royko and run with the picture when he was like 30 for like 40 years. But then he changed his picture. Everybody goes like, "Who's that guy?" He went from this young guy with his jet black hair. All of a sudden, he's got hardly any hair, all gray, and wearing glasses. They're like, "Is that the same guy?" Anyway, have a good weekend, buddy. S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up 59. We'll see where this all shakes out. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.